You're listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show.
Hello and welcome once again, Monster Sci-Fi Show fans. This is your host, the one and only Monster, with a super duper, and I do mean super duper, podcast about Star Trek, the latest movie that just came out this past Friday, directed by J.J. Abrams, which all those who follow him know that he is the creator of Lost, Alias, Felicity, which I've never seen, but nonetheless, it's part of his resume. So, on this special podcast, I have two great guests. Those who have listened to my podcast before will know Mr. Gene has been my co-host for the past couple of podcasts, and I welcome him back since he was not part of the Godzilla podcast, but this is Star Trek. He has to be on this podcast, damn it. So, Gene, thank you very much for coming back.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Second, we have an old friend of ours that Gene and I used to work with back in Borders, back in 1993, here in Florida. Well, now he's in Atlanta, is our friend, our dear friend, Tony, from the cinemaviewfinder.com. So, Tony, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much for having me here. I think for my audience, it'll be interesting. They've never heard my voice before. But, you know, it'll also be interesting because I don't think I've exhibited this level of geekiness on my site until this week came around. So, yeah, I'm excited to participate in this.
Yeah, Dave, you sound like you need a Red Bull. That'd be good. Some more enthusiasm would be nice.
What's been great about everything so far for the past, I think, couple of years is that with Web 2.0, the advent of Facebook and MySpace and all that, you know, we were able to reconnect via, in this case, our blogs, because Tony writes for the Cinema Viewfinder, which is his own personal blog. So I wanted Tony to kind of give a little plug about his site. So what exactly are you doing on your site?
Well, my site, you know, I try to cover film from a, you know, serious critical aspect. So I don't limit myself to just one particular genre. Like, I try to cover everything from westerns to sci-fi to, you know, action to just, you know, your mainstream dramas. I also try to do foreign movies and, you know, classic movies. So it runs the whole gamut. And
back to when we were talking at Borders, how many times we had, you know, really good conversations about the movies that we were selling, so to speak. So it's nice to see that we have an outlet for each other respectively, because I, too, have the blog, but more of a sci-fi angle, and whereas you are doing more of the general movies, and every once in a while you do, you know, a good take on sci-fi films, which I put onto my blog for you guys to read. And if you like his work, you know, feel free to go to his site. So there will be a link on this podcast in the show notes, but if you go to my blog, you'll see it in my blog role. Some of Viewfinder is already listed, so, you know, don't be afraid to cross genre, so to speak, because not everything is science fiction, but you want to see maybe a sci-fi actor that did, you know, a more mainstream film. That's fine. I love watching that. So I encourage everyone to, you know, broaden their horizons, not just sci-fi only, but, you know, look at maybe an actor or a writer, director who does sci-fi or vice versa. Let's not just limit ourselves. So that's what
Because knowledge is power. Yeah, that's good.
Thanks for the plug.
Not a problem, sir. All right. So before we go and take our first break, I just want to kind of give a quick feel about how we feel about the latest Star Trek film. Do we give it a thumbs up, thumbs down? Not even sure. What's our take? I'll leave it up to Mr. Dean first.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it. Very happy. I was not disappointed at all. I think for a restart, reboot of the genre, of the series, it was great. I definitely give it a high thumbs up.
Okay. Tony?
I'm kind of torn. I'll give you my honest opinion. I'm kind of torn between the two hats I wear when I watch movies. You know, from my serious, you know, film analyst standpoint, it's a great movie, and I'm really excited about what it opens up for movies in this franchise in the future. But, you know, as a Star Trek fan, I had some problems with certain things that, you know, I'll bring up in more detail later when we get into it.
You're a purist, okay. Tony.
Yeah, I'm a purist, but I'm trying to reform that aspect of myself.
JJ told you not to go to the movie if you're a purist. You know that, you warned people. Don't go to the purist. You're not going to like it. Don't go to the movie. It's like, wow, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, for
how
me,
about you, Monty? What did you think?
Well, first off, I went to Cinema Bistro. I'm not sure if anyone has gone to a Cinema Bistro experience, but this is the first time that I actually got with other people other than Mr. Gene. And the reason I say that, because we went to see The Watchmen in the Cinema Bistro, and it was just the two of us. And it was a great experience. I'm not knocking it. But this time I took my wife, who is just as, you know, a big Star Trek fan as I am, but we wanted to have a nice night out, which we haven't had done in quite some time. So we had our night out. We had a nice dinner, waiting for the movie to start and all that. And having this movie to be the way it was probably one of the best movie experiences I've had in a very long time. So I can't say it's all Star Trek because I did find problems, stuff that we're definitely going to have to kind of like say, that may not have been the greatest idea you had. But overall, I give this a great thumbs up. Also, I'm not even sure I may be able to do this on this podcast. If not, I'll probably put this on my blog. But the soundtrack itself is something that I think has to be at least mentioned, just because of certain themes that we grew up watching the movies. This is a brand new take, and I just want to see what your guys, your feelings on that as well. So, on
the
that
Beastie
note,
Boys,
huh?
What was the Beastie Boys?
No! Don't get me started on that. Just yet. Wait!
I have no problem with the Beastie Boys being in it. I thought I would, but then when I started thinking, oh, it'll probably be in that scene, then I just said to myself, oh, I can buy that, and it happens to be my favorite Beastie Boys song, so no problem with that at all.
All right. Let's hold that thought. Let's take the first break, and then we'll come right back, and we'll delve right into the best things we liked about Star Trek and the worst things we liked about Star Trek. And remember, folks, that these are going to be spoilers. So if you have not seen Star Trek, stop the podcast now. This is your one and only time that I will give you this warning. So we'll be back in about less than 30 seconds, and we'll continue this podcast. Thanks, guys.
Monster Sci-Fi Show presents a special Create Your Own Comic website. Discover on this site the tips and tricks that I learned to create my own comic, Star Wars, Aliens vs. Jedi. Best of all, it's all free. The information, the tools, the whole kit and caboodle, whatever the hell that means. Go to the Monster Sci-Fi Show blog on WordPress for more information.
Welcome back, Monster Sci-Fi Show fans. All right. As we discuss, we will now be talking about good things that we loved about this latest Star Trek film. And I think we can all agree that there were some great things that made this worthwhile as far as a moviegoer and for a Trek fan. So I'm going to start with Tony, if you wouldn't mind, give us your thoughts about what you loved about this movie.
First of all, one of the things I loved was the way they handled the space sequences. I mean, one of the things that had always been a criticism for me of the show was that everything was two-dimensional in the sense that the Enterprise seemed to be, you know, traveling on a flat surface through space. And the very first shot you see is the Kelvin flying through space upside down. And to me, that was like essentially like, okay, this is going to be a different Star Trek. This is going to adhere more to you know, the chaos that you see in Battlestar Galactica, a great show, you know, and it's going to be more chaotic, more of a sense that space is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of things that you felt when you watched the old show. So, I mean, that was one thing I loved about it. You know, also the performances, the cast, you know, the people they chose to cast in each role were all great. You know, as a longtime Trek fan, I think that while they may have changed the backstory of the characters, they didn't change the spirit of the characters, and these guys really interpreted that well. And in many cases, I thought they did a better job than the original cast did themselves. So I know that's heretical to say that, but...
I thought that Carl Urban was scary. He was just channeling DeForest Kelly. I was like, wow, that's just creepy.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
I that's the one thing I'm like, oh my God, he has it down pat. He is.
Right.
So far.
Right, and notice that the other person who, well, in my opinion, the other person who came closest was Simon Pegg as Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that those two guys, I mean, from interviews I've been reading, those two guys have been longtime Star Trek fans. So
they
obviously wanted to not mess with the originals, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. So I'd like to hear what else you guys think.
All right. Gene, why don't you go give your points?
I really was really fascinated with just all the little tips of the hat to all the fans, you know, the Chekhov speech impediment, and that being able to be understood by the computer when they pull out of Titan, the way the Enterprise is in Star Trek II, you know, you're giving a lot of tips of the hat to the fans, you know, and yet I thought that this movie did something that I hadn't done in a while in the Star Trek film. It made me laugh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really. I think by creating a new cast, they were able to really make, you know, get new blood in there, new performances, and more improv, just slapstick stuff, almost slapstick, not quite, but, you know, just situation comedy stuff, like Kirk's hand swelling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the constantly being hit with a hypo from Bones going, I can fix that, and the constant, you know, the friendship was really good, too. Very happy with that, and the way you know, it's nice to see when they first meet. You know, it was funny because I was like, well, I normally don't like prequels, but I'm really getting into this because
mm-hmm.
such a rich history. You already know these characters. It's not like, you know, Jar Jar and Qui-Gon Jinn and these people. You're like, who are these characters? You know who these people are. You know, and
right.
It was fun to go back to their past. You know, to the starting point, which is Kirk's birth, essentially, and take it from there. Really was happy with that.
Yeah, I want to just add that it'll be hard to do a prequel from here because I as I read somewhere, what are you going to show next time how, you know, Kirk was conceived?
Well, you know, it's not going to be like a 5-minute film anyway.
Well, Marty, before we got into the end of that, tell us what you thought because there's some points
okay.
we need to hit on this.
Well, here's the thing. You know, we've been eager for not only a new Star Trek film, because God knows Nemesis just blew big chunks. You know, considering it broke the lore of being an even number, which was supposed to be a very good number for all the Star Trek films, and it just tanked. So now that we have this redemption of a new Star Trek film, everyone is obviously a fan at one point or another throughout the whole show. Zachary Quinto was like Spock that we never got to see, at least growing up. That's going to be, you know, this generation's Spock, not Leonard Nimoy. It's going to be Zachary Quinto. Chris Pine, that's going to be their Kirk, not William Shatner's Kirk, you know, that we grew up with. And that's fine because if you look at the James Bond series, you know, everyone has their own Bond character. Those who are much older than me, as I've spoken about this before, you know, will grow up on Sean Connery and will love him for that. Those will be more mine, maybe Sean Connery, maybe Pierce Brosnan. That's fine, too. But it's a great feeling to have this revitalized once more, and there's nothing wrong with that. So, yes, you can make Spock feel, make him do things that we've never seen Spock do before. That's wow. You know, he acknowledges that to some degree. We see some anger in him. We see a new Spock. It may not be our Spock, but it's still great to watch. So with all that, plus we have, you know, a great story. We have great special effects. Space battles that we have never really seen before on any Star Trek film. And the only one closest one to that was Star Trek II, where the ships kind of nearly collided to each other, and that's about it.
Right.
So there
right.
really hasn't been like that Star Wars energy fight scene that we would all be mesmerized. This was that movie. You know, this is going to be, you know, now what Star Wars is going to do.
How great was that sequence? I want to ask you this while you're on the subject. How great was that sequence when Sulu comes out of warp and there's so much debris that he practically can't avoid crashing into it?
Yeah. I mean,
and compare that to the same type of sequence in First Contact.
Mm-hmm.
When they come out of warp, you know, during that opening Borg battle or whatever, and it's supposed to be the same deal, you know, where there's all this debris around, and that one looks so clean compared to the chaos that you see in this one, you know?
Yeah, a lot of it, too, was that the camera was never, and this is just my little quirk, you know, I want to see choreographed battle scenes, or you can follow the action a little bit more easily, but sometimes the cinema verite where the camera is there, documenting the scene as it happens like there's going to get a lot of shaking and not things are quickly in focus, but you get an idea of this is really bad. This is not good. This is like a disaster, and you're in the thick of it. So it really puts you in that kind of mode that you've never felt like that in almost any Star Trek film. So I give it props for that because that is a great scene, period.
And I understand your criticism when it comes to, I hate action movies where the action is shot so tight that you get lost with the choreography.
Yes.
You're talking about Michael Bay movies, yeah.
Right. However, in this movie, though they got right to the edge of getting to that point, I never got to the point where I actually felt lost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I could still follow what was going on. So,
okay. Does anyone want to bring up any more points on what we loved about it? Anything about the story?
I was going to say that one of the things I loved about it was that you could tell from, you know, just from what Gene was just saying about how many tips of the hat to the fans there were. You could tell that the writers and the director respect the roots of the show and know, you know, they had an intimate knowledge of the backstory. However, they didn't feel limited by it. They got rid of some pretty sacred cows within the Star Trek, you know, universe, like the, you know, the destruction of Vulcan. That was major. That was
major.
And that's that's not only major from a, you know, from a backstory standpoint, but that's going to change the character of Spock immensely, like the motivation. In terms of, you know, now this guy is an alien without a home. He's an outsider for more reasons than just for being the only Vulcan on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big spoiler. I mean, I know we said we weren't going to warn anybody, but here's another big spoiler. There's the death of Amanda, his mother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Now, like, I started thinking and I started saying where before he was trying to emulate his father's stoicism as a Vulcan, you know, I wonder now if this character instead is going to try to preserve his human heritage as a tribute to his mom. You know, and maybe that's going to make him more accessible to his emotions than he was before. You know, like, that really changes the character on a really fundamental level. So they did things that are going to keep the fans guessing so that we, you know, even the fans who feel like they know the show might say, hey, now this is really pretty different, so I don't know where this is going, you know?
Right. This actually, sorry to add, but it reminded me, if you watch The Cage, and you see Spock, planet side, and they're looking at some kind of alien plant, and he smiles.
Right.
That now kind of keeps with what is happening now, because he is, you know, you don't see that emotion after that point on unless he's infected with something. But it kind of now fits in time, perfectly with that, just because it's like it would make sense that he would at least delve into that human side, especially after his mother has been killed in front of him, which I'm like, holy crap. They really did something that was really ballsy to do, but they kept it as a way of, this is not your Star Trek anymore. So everything you thought was so, not anymore. So
that was
That was in
all the other teasers, the trailers, you know, forget what you know about Star Trek,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the interesting thing for me was that they're pitching this as a reimagining, and it makes perfect sense. Because Star Trek's popularity has been draining, you know. The last movie, Nemesis, you know, it was 7 years ago, and it made the least amount of money of all the Star Trek movies. It only made $43 million, you know. Shows like Voyager and Enterprise, they continue on the airwaves. They decline in popularity. Star Trek is not hip anymore. It's not cool. So
yeah.
I think that what they did was by going, you know, to Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman and having J.J. Abrams direct it and having them just twist it, you know, and make it fresh and new. It gives it up to a whole new generation,
yeah.
you know,
and it
brings back the old fans, unless
mm-hmm.
they can't get over the past.
Yeah,
well,
if
they can't get over it, then I say that we move on without them, because honestly, like, you know, they've been catering to the hardcore fans, of which I'm
mm-hmm.
one of them, for
mm-hmm.
so long. That they got to the point where it was getting so heavy with continuity and all the excitement had been drained out of the show. Like, one of the things that I loved about this movie that I hadn't seen since the original series was that they brought back more of the humor that you talked about, Gene,
mm-hmm.
and they brought back more of the sexiness of the show, like in that scene where Kirk is fooling around with that green-skinned girl in her dorm. Like,
mm-hmm.
the sexiness was a big component of the original show, and so was the humor, and so was the action. And
mm-hmm.
for one reason or another, all of that had all but disappeared. Like, I mean, you know, with the original cast even, you didn't get to see that in the films because they were getting a little too long in the tooth to be playing sex scenes and running around and doing action sequences. You know, a lot of that had disappeared, and then you got the Next Generation, which is so stuffy, like the atmosphere, that they didn't go into that either. So I was glad to see some of that back.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I love the little nods they did. For me, I'm not sure if anyone picked this up here, but Scotty had made some kind of reference about his transporter technology and how he did something to Admiral Archer's
Eagle.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God. I just, like, cried out laughing because no one else got it, but it was me. It was like, I know what he was referring to. Like, that was brilliant. To put something like that from a show that no one has even watched, it was to me. That was speaking to me as a fan, and that was brilliant. Absolutely
right.
Brilliant.
And how ironic is it now that because of the change in the timeline,
mm-hmm.
that the only show that we've watched now that still would remain unchanged in this new timeline is
Enterprise. Oh, God. Oh, man. Which, you know, that doesn't not give Enterprise leeway to explain, what the hell is the Borg doing on the show and why they never utter the word Ferengi in the damn show until much later in Next Generation. But, of course, that is now all wiped out. And, I still hate Enterprise for doing that now.
Well,
what did you guys all think about that time travel aspect? I mean, I had some problems with the whole Wait, okay, so I understand. The rum and the chip goes through the time, the rip in time space and shows up in the past, that's fine. They destroy the Kelvin, fine. Kirk is born, fine, no problem. Really big problem with, okay, then they wait 25 years for the kids to grow up, you know, and grow stuff. And I was like, so wait, what are they doing for 25 years? I don't understand. What?
Well, there's a scene there where there's, we don't see, and I think it might have been cut, in which there was a discussion that they attacked Romulan, attacked Klingons. But that was just a throwaway line about what had happened. So obviously there was some kind of beef with the Klingons, but that's about it. You know, they're just waiting around until, you know, Spock shows up.
Well,
so,
you know, in actuality, I don't know if you guys know this, but there was apparently a long sequence that was shot and was removed from the film after it didn't test too well, where Nero and his crew had been imprisoned on the Klingon prison planet, Ruropenle.
Okay.
And you can still see some of those sequences in some of the trailers. But they were imprisoned, and then they were there for 25 years before they escaped. And that was what was heard on the radio, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
Klingon ship is still here, and in fine working condition. Hooray!
And you know, and truthfully, I think that if they would have left the scene in, I think fans would have been happy. But honestly, I think it would have stopped the movie cold, because this movie moves like a bullet.
And so
I think that they did the right thing in removing that, you know, because nobody cares anyway. The villain's a villain, and they just want to see him get to it, you know.
Okay. Gene, let me ask this quick question. How are we doing on time?
We should cut. Yeah, I was about to interrupt it. we got about a minute 20, so.
Okay. Well, let's do this, because what we were planning to do was that we're going to do in 20 minutes, obviously we didn't, was to talk about the good things about Star Trek and the bad things about Star Trek. And we kind of touched a little bit in the last couple of minutes or so. So let's actually take a break now. We're going to pick up the conversation talking about the things we didn't like about Star Trek. So I'm sure there'll be another 20 minutes into the conversation that we'll go into. So Monster Sci-Fi Show fans, please stick around. You don't want to miss this. Thanks.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show is celebrating all things Godzilla. This incredible monster movie icon has been thrilling audiences from around the world for over 50 years. Join me in reliving Godzilla's famous battles with Megalon, King Ghidorah, Mothra, Rodan, Mechagodzilla, Space Godzilla, Destroyer, just to name a few. In addition, be prepared for the fan film Godzilla Zero Hour, which pits Godzilla against Gamera in a battle to the death. And if that wasn't enough, IMAX is releasing Godzilla 3D to the Max. Keep listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast for more details.
All right, so we are now back, ready to talk about the things we did not like about the Star Trek films. Now, we did agree that we loved the film, but as much as we love it, there will always be things, especially for our Star Trek fans, that are going to have problems with. So we talked about it briefly with the time-traveling aspect, which, yeah, I had a problem with that, especially with the meeting of Spock on the ice planet, him seeing Vulcan being destroyed. So my problem was the continuity in that sequence, because obviously Nero had captured Spock, kept him alive, threw him on his planet so he could watch his place get burned up. So one, he's left on his ice planet, and I guess what? Nero gives him a parka to kind of make sure he's nice and warm. Plus he has a cave that he has to hang out, and he has fire, so there was just, like, you know, not enough time for all of that to have happened Or there should have been a scene in which there was Spock and Nero, some kind of conversation, some kind of retribution, you know, and then here's your banishment. You know, now you're going to watch your planet, you know, suffer and so forth. All right, fine. But that doesn't happen. So the Enterprise is going now to chase the mining ship, and then Kirk and Spock get into the fight, and then Spock takes out Kirk and says, get him off my ship, literally, and throw him in the same ice planet as Spock. That I had a problem with. That just
all right,
stuck.
All right, I'm going to add to your problem. I'm going to
okay.
I'm going to heighten your problem with it now with the
detail
I'm about to say. and Gene, I don't think you'll be as familiar with this because you didn't watch too much of the original series recently, but that ice planet that he threw him on was called Delta Vega.
Okay.
Okay. Delta Vega, if you really watch the show hardcore like I have, Delta Vega is the planet that is on the edge of the galaxy that Captain Kirk abandons his best friend Gary Mitchell on in the second pilot of the show Where No Man Has Gone Before. So all of a sudden they have moved Delta Vega closer to Vulcan. Literally, like, it's Vulcan's, like, twin planet, because, you know, Spock can see Vulcan from there. So that was a major continuity shift, you know? I personally didn't have a problem with it, because I'm like, whatever, I'm a geek, I'm the only one who knows who Delta Vega is, like, who gives a shit, you know? But I just wanted to point that out to Monty because Monty already had a big problem with it. So now he probably even has a bigger problem with it.
Well, on top of that, here's like, okay, Kirk is in his tube telling or being told that, you know, there's a nearby Starfleet facility that will come get you. Really? Because there was Scotty and the little mining guy, whatever, they didn't come out and do anything until they went to the actual station itself. So, obviously, that was a lie, or at least I didn't understand that because there was no one else in that same station. So, again, that was another problem that I had with that, okay, fine, you were abandoned onto an outpost, but that outpost never really came out and did anything about that. And that stupid ice creature that came out, which a lot of people are comparing it to the Cloverfield creature that J.J. Abrams did from 2008, you know, came out, ate or tried to rip off the other animal that was trying to kill Kirk, and then
runs out of the park. You saw that back in an episode one of Star Wars.
Yeah,
same
joke.
It was just like, wow, that didn't work then, doesn't work now. Okay. Run, Captain Kirk. Wow, you don't we look afraid. That's okay.
Yeah, so.
You guys didn't like the creature? You guys didn't like the creature, really?
It was cool!
It was okay.
You know
I just
what I
didn't
liked
really
about the creature? What I liked about the creature was, like, good, finally we're seeing an alien that doesn't walk on two legs and has a bumpy forehead. We're seeing, like, a real alien. You know what I mean? Like, it's about time we see that on this kind of.
I guess. I mean, we did see other little aliens throughout the whole movie that were, you know, little twists, like with, you know, larger eyes, or there was that weird Morn-looking creature in the bar scene.
Yeah, right.
Which I'm like, oh, that's Morn? No? Okay, whatever.
Mornish.
Yeah, exactly, Mornish.
Yeah, save your prayers for the Mornish after. Yeah, I got to go.
Good up, Paul.
Thank you.
But along that line, still on the damn, you know, ice planet, now we have Spock, much older Spock. Fine. He has to tell him all that has happened. There's a great deal of exposition
yeah.
mind, which I'm like, you know, on last week's episode, this is what happened. And I'm like, so in like a minute or two, that's all that happened, and you get this backstory of what had happened that should have been seen and not done like that. And that was my other pain about watching that.
My problem with that scene was that, okay, I understand, fine, okay, great. You have to have your mandatory exposition scene to explain what's going on. Old Spock is there. No problem, fine, do that. Okay, so Kirk is there for at least a day, right? It's a walk from the snow cave to the Starfleet facility, right? Great, a day. Okay, so they meet Scotty, get to set up all the equipment for a trans-warp transport.
Yeah.
The Enterprise has been traveling for a day, you know, at faster-than-light speeds. And I'm like, wow, and how,
Lucky for us that Scotty happened to have been there, that he was going to create this formula to do this new type of transportation, but he never invented it, and thank God Spock was there to fill in the formula.
To give it to him.
Oh,
which
my
I didn't
God.
Have a problem with. I didn't have a problem with that because, you know, Scotty creates everything cool in that show. Transparent aluminum, you know, here's the formula. I'll give it to you. How do we know he didn't create it? Fine. No problem with that. I've seen Star Trek IV. I accept. You know, but still, I mean, the ship is moving. It's been going for a day. You can't possibly know the coordinates. You can't possibly calculate that. Then again, Spock could calculate time travel coordinates, but I still don't buy it. I really didn't. Just kind of sat there dumb and went, okay.
No,
right,
I mean, there's a lot
I've seen.
There's a lot more I can go into, but I want to hear what your thoughts are. So, Tony, why don't you go give us an idea of what you did not like since you're the most vocal so far about all this.
I understand the little stuff that you guys didn't like. But to me, I mean, that kind of stuff is trivial in the course of the movie when you really look at it. The same as the Delta Vega example I brought up. Like who cares? You know what I mean?
Nerd.
But you gotta say here is something that I think is much more of a problem for me, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a fan, okay? So I grew up watching Star Trek.
Right.
And I like Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock and all these guys, and there's three shows, and it spawns, you know, an infinite number of other shows and movies and whatnot. So they had to have done something right on the three shows, right?
Right.
Well,
right.
All of a sudden, this time travel thing messes up a whole lot of what I liked about the shows and the characters and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And principally, you know, let me just narrow it down to Captain Kirk, okay?
Okay.
All right, they kill Captain Kirk's dad at the beginning of the movie. He grows up as a rebellious teen with an abusive stepfather, and then Captain Pike's got to convince him to enlist, and then he's, like, getting into bar fights and all that. Well, to me, I mean, that kills a lot of what the essence of the Kirk character was to begin with,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, you know, we hear throughout the series that Kirk was more of a, you know, a bookworm in the academy. And, you know, and then it actually gets rid of whole storylines that unfolded on the series. Like, for example, you know, the episode Court Martial, Monty,
mm-hmm.
that episode can never happen because Ben Finney, the person who, you know, who has a vendetta against Jim Kirk because of something that occurred on a cadet ship that they were both serving on, well, now they never served on it together. So that storyline can never happen. The story of Obsession, where, you know, he remembers this alien from when he was a lieutenant under another captain, that can never happen. Because now he was never even a lieutenant. He went straight from being, you know, a cadet to a captain in the course of one adventure.
Okay, wait. If I may interrupt you for a second, Dr. Hyde, I'd like to speak to Mr. Jekyll, please. You like this film. I understand the continuity problems. I do. But we've got Star Trek back now. Shouldn't we be happy for that? I understand the continuity's ruined. Believe me. I get it. And I'm sorry. All right? But I'd like something fresh. You know, I want more. You know,
I'm talking strictly as a fan right now. And as a fan, my point is that, you know, those things were formative experiences to the character that I liked. And now, is this character the same as that character I liked? I mean, I would argue that there was a lot of the character stuff thrown out the window by this, you know, and the only stuff that you got left is more of the stuff that was kind of like what made Kirk a caricature sometimes, like, you know, that he was a womanizer, that he was, you know, rebellious and reckless and all those things. That's what you've got left now. But you're losing a lot of the stuff that made him interesting. The fact that, okay, yes, he's rebellious now, but he used to be a bookworm. That's an interesting turn for that character.
But the thing is that in this case, I mean, the reason that they broke the timeline, in my opinion, because I thought about it. I talked about it with some friends, you know, that seen the movie, and I've looked online. You know, the idea of creating this alternate reality timeline, it's like Back to the Future 2, you know? You're now in you know, the Star Trek Universe A. And because of that, you can kind of, I mean, I think the writers, they knew what they were trying to do. They knew it, that you had to revitalize it. You had to bring it back. You know, Star Trek is a really lucrative business, and it's been failing lately. So how do you not mess with the fans and yet, you know, keep everyone happy? And the answer is you have to mess with continuity. Because the thing is, fine, those adventures still happen, potentially, in an alternate universe. But since the timeline has been broken, and for the first time they left it open, this alternate universe now continues, you know, you get to enjoy the movies, and you can still kind of have your series.
Right, and you know what? And the Dr. Jekyll part of me, the part of me that's
is that the frosted side of you?
What?
No, the frosted side of you.
Yeah, like that side of me understands everything you're saying, and it makes sense.
I know.
I'm just saying that there's a part of me that is gonna miss that other stuff because I'm like, wow, that's what I liked about the show, you know, like. Now it's going to be like I'm going to have to refamiliarize myself with this cast, and maybe I'll like it just as much, you know. But there's enough that they changed that it makes me wary. And you know, granted, they had to do the continuity change because what they really wanted to do was inject jeopardy into the concept. They wanted it so that you don't go to the movies now and go, oh, Chekhov's going to be safe. I know he doesn't die. Well, now he could die. I mean, they got rid of Vulcan. What's to say that Chekhov can't die or Spock or whoever? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So that's why they did it, you know? And we'll just have to see how it pans out.
Yeah. I mean, a fair comparison to this is what Marvel Comics did to the comics that, you know, we grew up with, make it all now the Ultimates comics.
Correct.
In which
they
changed everything that we knew and gave it a fresh point from this time on. Everything you knew about that character does not exist. So, you know, now you have the Avengers in which you would have Wolverine and Spider-Man joining a team that he would not have been before. So now I understand that. I can go with that. But it's hard to kind of like, what information do I keep and what information can I forget? Because now I'm going to have to like say, you know, pre-Star Trek and then post-Star Trek. You know, my information lies where? Because now
right.
I'm going to have two new worlds to kind of, like, keep in check because, like, oh, in this episode, oh, wait, I have to know. That happened before the new Star Trek movie. And so it's going to be hard. I'm going to be one that will be bitching and complaining if things go awry. But it does open up the possibility that this is no longer safe, that things that we thought would be, you would have a red shirt die in every single episode, maybe it may not be a red shirt anymore. You know, it could be someone that, like you said, it could be Chekhov, it could be Sulu, it could be people that we care about now going to be in jeopardy, not some guy you just met 5 minutes ago and you know he's going to die because he's wearing a red shirt. So,
right. Let me say one more thing, and I know I'm hogging it a second, but I just want to say one more thing. What you just mentioned about the Ultimate Marvel Universe, like, that goes to what I'm saying, because, I mean, when you really look at it, like, if you walk down the street and you say to somebody, hey, you know, who's Spock? You know, whether it's a fan or not a fan, you know, they're basically going to say, oh, it's that guy from the show who's got pointy ears and he's always serious, you know? Like, they're basically giving you the character that's distilled into pop culture. And they're letting go of all the rest of the stuff so that the character's still recognizable, but all the rest of the stuff is not really important because, you know, in pop culture, like, it's like they get it already. It's Spock. But here's one of the other criticisms I had with the film in terms of that, in terms of the Spock character. Like we said, Spock is supposed to be that serious guy with the pointy ears. Well, any new fan who watches this movie, any fan who has never seen the show before, and there's a lot of them because you ask almost anybody under 30 and they haven't watched this movie, this series before.
But they're normal.
They're gonna watch they're gonna watch this movie and they're going to think, like, oh, Spock is this lunatic who's always losing his cool and, you know, and you never get the sense, like, they didn't establish well enough that this guy is an unemotional guy. Like, from not the way the series did, like, where you saw him break his emotion only occasionally. Like, in this movie, he spends half the movie freaking out over one thing or another thing. Those are the kinds of things that I want to see in the next movie. They get back to a little bit more consistency in that. Like I, you know, I don't want to see in the next movie that Kirk and Spock are still having growing pains in their friendship, you know? I want them to be more like they were in the last 20 minutes of the movie where they're running around and fighting together and then they, you know, both agree that they're going to, you know, like, get along and that kind of thing.
Well, since you mentioned that, I'm sorry, but I wanted to bring in this point that the one thing, when you mentioned about the running around and fighting scene, the one thing this movie suffered, as well as most of the Star Trek films, except for two, was the villain. I thought Nero was interesting in the very beginning, but after a while, I really didn't give a damn about Nero. I mean, granted, he is better than a couple of the past Star Trek villains, but this is another problem with the Star Trek films, is that there is not a really good villain. Ever since Khan, there's no one that can measure up, and the Borg Queen was fine for what she was, but everything else from that point on, all the villains suck. And this one was just, after a while, I just didn't care about Nero.
But don't you think it's because there's not enough time? Like, I mean, Khan had the benefit of having a whole episode about him 20 years ago,
before you
get to them in the movie.
Right, granted. That makes sense. I understand that. You know, there is the prequel graphic novel or the trade paper that came out for his backstory. But if you have to put that before the movie, you're not going to get that same impression about who this person is like you had with Khan. So you need to put in that information more into this film rather than the graphic novel or the comic book. Because you need to have the motivation, and I didn't feel it. Other than, yes, okay, Romulus was destroyed. Spock was supposed to have done this. Fine, but that was just not enough for me. At least, maybe it's just a story plot line, but it failed after me.
Look, I think what happens is that the movie kind of suffers a little bit from that. There's too much information that you have to convey to the audience, you know? And even though Eric Brana is a fine actor, and he does okay in his scenes, you're right. He does lack the actual threat, the actual fear, the actual menace, you know?
Yeah.
It's not him that you're afraid of. It's the ship, if anything, you know? Or something else. It's not him, but he's the antagonist of the film, and so you personify the menace in him. But you're right, he didn't get enough time, but you're reintroducing the new cast to everybody. Everyone gets their scene. It's an ensemble cast. I like that everyone had their own little bit.
I agree.
The villain was weak, but, you know, overall happy with the movie. And hate to say this, but it's time for another break.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, you know what? Because I'm sure we already got into 40 minutes of this podcast, I'm going to have to break this into another podcast. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to continue recording this podcast, and I'm going to make this a two-parter. So as much as I want this to be all on one show, I do want to give you guys at least, you know, a good break, because you can't go on, you know, listening to a straight hour and 30, maybe 2 hour conversation at a time. So I think 40 minutes plus is good enough for right now. So I want to thank my guest, Mr. Gene. Thank you very much again for coming back to my show.
Always a pleasure.
Tony, you know, stick around because we got a lot more to discuss. So I thank you for giving me some great inputs on this Star Trek review.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, guys. So, again, we're going to have a second part coming up. So Monster Sci-Fi Show.
Get the lines right, too. You got the cue cards. What are you doing?
Stick around.
Read.
We got a lot more shows still to come. So don't miss out. Thanks, guys.